Takes from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And I'm your co-host, John Drumble.
John,
how are you doing, Darren?
I'm all right. We said how we asked each other how the other one was doing at the same time. That's good.
Yeah. After 2 years, we're finally in sync with each other. And this is an exciting week because we got a special guest in the studio with us today. Well, not really in the studio. We're recording this remotely as we do in pandemic world. But we've got a buddy of ours. We've got comic KP Burke with us.
Did Darren use the word kismet?
I did.
He did.
Jesus, man. All right. You guys are alienating pretty much all the southern states with vocabulary like this. It's not good, man. It's a
Okay. Okay. Well, you know, this is why we have you on to you know, like get us out of our little woke bubble.
That's happy to be here with you fellas.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, KP, he hosts a podcast of his own, the American Loser Podcast, which is all about American history. I mean, KP, why don't you tell people about it?
Well, the elevator pitch for it is that it's the stories of coming in second place in American history, because we don't remember losers fondly in America. So it's kind of like weird stories, bizarre stories from American history, stuff that usually gets a line in a history book in high school. We actually take the time to break down everything. So it's me and my father, my quote dilf of a dad. That was I'm a little uncomfortable with some of the fan mail he's been getting lately. So
he's getting like those nudie pics like they do in prison.
Very close. It's the same way that Charles Manson was able to get married in prison. I think my father's going to have a fandom for the next couple of years.
All right. So your dad's a new Charles Manson. You heard it here first, folks.
But we should say your dad is also like a happily married man.
He is. And just like Charles Manson, though, he also has never killed anyone.
Wow.
Technically.
It's going to be a great episode. I can feel it already.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. This is going to be fun. So, I mean, what made you want to start doing a podcast about American history? I mean, I know you and your dad are both big American history buffs.
We are. It's an excellent question, by the way. It started as a book, but I'm super fucking lazy. So it was originally going to be a book. I was going to write a couple of chapters. Each chapter would be a different person that ran for president and lost. And then we started finding other weird stuff along the road here. And then finally I realized I was calling my dad to tell him all the weird stuff I was finding, from between the history books, if you will. And then I said, I should probably just, at some point bring him into it, since this is the only guy that seems to be interested in what we're doing. But yeah, man, it's fun. We're in year three right now. Actually, both you and Darren are overdue to come on as guests, by the way.
Ooh. Yeah, we'd love to. That would be a lot of fun. We'd have to, find somebody that you haven't covered yet.
I think there's a painter named John Trumbull we might be able to talk about.
That's an idea. That is an idea. Painted the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
And so much more too, man. It's
But it used to be the back of the $2 bill. But we'll put a pin in that for right now, I guess, because we brought you on. We thought of bringing you on for this week because this week SNL had a first time host, Bill Burr, who we know is one of your favorite stand up comedians.
I mean, if anybody who likes stand up, if they don't like Bill Burr, they're very much suspect.
Fair enough.
He's for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming Bill is probably like one of the guys who made you want to become a stand-up. How long have you been doing stand-up, KP?
I really had to stop counting because it was getting depressing. I think so. I would have started. I think we're like 8 years in right now because I think I started doing it when I got back from when I was in the military. When I got out of the military is really when I started doing stand-up more.
Mm-hmm.
So 2012 maybe.
Yeah, and you won like a prestigious comedy award within your like your first year.
Fake news.
Yeah. Oh, I was trying to cue you up for one of your bits, but okay.
No, this is free, man. Those bastards got to pay for that shit.
That's true. Okay, yeah, that's true. If you want to hear that great joke from KP Zach. You go to a club, you pay a 2-drink minimum, and it's worth your while. You're going to laugh on it.
Show him the money, as they say.
But we're covering SNL season 46, episode 2. Bill Burr hosting, Jack White musical guesting. This is from the October 10th, 2020 show. And, I mean, KP, are you much of an SNL watcher under normal circumstances? Are you a fan of the show?
No, I teased you guys because you guys are friends of mine, so I could do it. But it was I haven't been home on a Saturday since I was like 15. So it's difficult to keep up with the show. I think Alec Baldwin had a great joke about it one time where he was saying – Saturday Night Live or Sunday morning on Hulu.
Oh, okay.
That's very accurate. Yeah. I mean, you don't have to watch it live anymore. That is the truth. Yeah. And
I watched for the research for this, dude. I'm not even exaggerating. I watched it over breakfast this morning.
Ooh. Over a bowl of Fruit Loops? Nice.
Eggs, baby.
Oh,
nice.
Fancy time. Wow.
Big healthy Irish breakfast.
Hi.
Well, I was drinking during it, so I guess that checks out accuracy wise.
Well, that's very on brand.
Yeah. Irish coffee, got it.
Well, I mean, were you looking forward to this? Was it what you expected, or would you want to just dive in and let your opinions emerge as we go?
Well, I'll say this: I think it was Joe Fernandez has a great quote about how, because we're in the community, you said bubble earlier. For comics mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But Fernandez had a great point. He goes, people aren't like, we think people are famous, but they're not really, they're only famous within the bubble. So Joe Fernandez has a theory that you're not famous until his mom knows who you are.
Yeah.
And Bill Burr, hilariously enough, my mother texted me early. She goes, Bill Burr's hosting SNL tonight. So you guys brought me on for a great episode. I'm very appreciative of it.
Well, that's great. I mean, it came up like a week or two ago, I was just thinking like, KP's a big fan of Bill Burr. This might be a good episode to bring KP on. So, I'm glad you were able to do that. I'm glad we were able to work this out.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually kind of like when they announced that it was going to be Bill Burr, I was actually pretty surprised because I was thinking, well, does the average Joe know who Bill Burr is? I mean, he's done stuff like, Breaking Bad. He's on The Mandalorian now. He was in King of Staten Island. But like, unless you're like a stand-up comedy nerd or you're really into his stand-up, I don't know if the average person would know who he is. And so I do feel like a little bit like this was a lot of people's first introduction to him. And it was quite an entrance. I mean, especially the monologue, which we'll get into. That monologue was... People weren't ready for that. I wasn't ready for that.
Yeah. We'll cover that in a little bit. But first, we have the cold open, which as is SNL's tradition, they're covering the election, and so they did the VP fly debate is what they're titling it on YouTube. So we had Kate McKinnon as moderator Susan Page, Beck Bennett as Vice President Mike Pence, and Maya Rudolph returning as Kamala Harris. What do we think of this, guys?
It was interesting, I'll say that. I think what this cold open kind of did something that the last one did too, where it kind of followed beat for beat what the actual debate was like, but then like midway through it took this like sort of surreal turn.
Yeah.
Like if you remember like last week it was, pretty much beat for beat what happened at the debate last week, which was a total disaster. And then Jim Carrey, as Biden pulled out that remote and muted Trump. And with this one, they did something else, which was actually kind of super surreal, where it was pretty much beat for beat how the actual debate was. But then they cut away to Joe Biden, played by Jim Carrey, with his wife, played by Heidi Gardner. And Joe... It was kind of like the sketch was almost like it was written by two different people a little bit, where it had like Joe saying, Kamala needs me. I need to get in there. And he then, because during the actual debate, a fly landed on Mike Pence's head and kind of stood there for 2 minutes. And that's all the internet talked about for like, dude, I swear, like on my Facebook page, there was like 20 fly jokes, like they were all the same jokes. For some reason, that fly like took over everything.
But yeah, the fly went viral this week. It was something else.
Yeah. So then what happened is like Jim Carrey played Joe Biden saying, "Oh, Kamala needs me." Then he goes into this experimental machine that turns him into a fly, much like the movie with Jeff Goldblum, The Fly.
Yeah. I mean, at one point there, they actually cut and pasted Jim Carrey's Joe Biden face over footage of Jeff Goldblum from the movie, like stepping into the teleportation chamber. So yeah, this was weird. This was, I mean, we knew they were going to do something with the fly, but I don't know. This was a weak start, I thought.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know. It kind of meandered a little bit. I mean, it was interesting to see kind of Jim Carrey kind of turn into Jeff Goldblum and do his Jeff Goldblum impression. And then Keenan came out as Herman Cain, who was like, who was also came back reincarnated as a fly, who was also on Pence's head. It got really strange.
Yeah. Well, I mean, KP, what did you think of this? How did this hit you?
I think one of the things that actually alienates me from SNL is usually the cold opens. Because I don't do topical, man. I live a very nice life by not knowing what's going on in the news.
So, the KP bubble.
Yeah, I literally would keep myself in the bubble, man. But it's so sometimes I miss points on certain things like that. I did think it was interesting because I won't lie. At some point, I tuned out on that when it just was like doing other shit in the background. But to then cut to Keenan as a fly sitting there, I was like, all right, that's at least clever. They're playing with something, you know what I mean? But
yeah, I mean, I thought it was interesting in that they did go in a more surreal direction, and since they did that last week with Jim Carrey as Biden too, I'm wondering if that's like Jim Carrey's influence or if just reality is so absurd now they're just like, okay, this is the only way we can satirize this.
Right, because you can't really mock a mockery, so the way to go about it is to just go super weird.
Yeah, yeah. I just thought that this was a weak open. Partly because, well, I didn't think Jim Carrey's Jeff Goldblum impression was very good.
Yeah, that was. It was a choice. It was a choice.
So, I don't know. So,
you guys are just shitting on Jim Carrey, man. Jesus, what? Yeah. The critics.
That's right. No, we're burning those bridges behind us before they're even built. Yeah. I think that's something that Frank said in one of our initial descriptions of the podcast.
You need to be taken down a peg, Jim Carrey. You had too good for too long.
That's right.
But yeah, like as far as cold opens goes, I thought it was kind of not that great. But I mean, it was good to see Beck Bennett as Mike Pence and not like a celebrity playing Mike Pence. So that's a plus.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed his Mike Pence. I mean, his Mike Pence was rather restrained. They didn't really go back to the running gag of Mike Pence is secretly gay, which I think they've gotten a lot of mileage out of. And Maya Rudolph's Kamala Harris is always great. I didn't really get her saying Joe Biden as one word because I'm like, is that a thing that Kamala Harris does? I haven't noticed that. But
I didn't notice that either. Maybe that's something she's trying to. Maybe she said it once and maybe Maya picked up on it. So like she figured, oh, that's funny enough for me to keep on continuing. Like George Bush is not gone there. Like he doesn't say that all the time, but you know, it's funny enough to kind of run with.
Yeah, maybe.
I feel like Maya Rudolph has the impression down pat, but unfortunately it's like she's so good at the impression that it reminds you why she's kind of an off-putting person.
Uh-huh.
She kills it. I felt like, you know, if you, to the untrained eye, you could potentially convince somebody in, fucking Indonesia that they're watching an actual VP debate at some points because both of them are killing it. But again, both of them are uncharismatic, kind of semi unlikable people. So,
but isn't that what you want in a vice president?
Yeah, that's, they delivered the authenticity of not being likable. It's.
So you don't find either one of them likable?
Well, I wrote a joke about, I deleted this the other day. I try not to talk topical too much, but I wrote a joke that Kamala has discipline and restraint, and she showcased that by not using her lizard tongue to eat the fly off of Pence's head.
Interesting.
Wow. And but at the same time, Pence is also, he looks like the mayor of Legoland, so who the hell knows, right?
Yeah. True, yeah.
I think a lot of people were saying Mike Pence reminds him of that white-haired guy in the Johnny Quest cartoon.
Race Bannon.
That's a great name.
Yeah. If anyone was going to get it, it was going to be Trumbull. No.
I mean, I'm a fan of that show, and yeah, I have Facebook friends who have worked on incarnations of Johnny Quest, and I've heard the nickname Racist Bannon for Mike Pence many a time. So,
ooh. All right.
So anyway, so moving on, we had a Bill Burr monologue, and they did the thing that I find so adorable when they have a stand-up host where he gives his monologue with a hand mic, because comedians feel naked without a mic in their hand.
It is unsettling.
It is. I mean, you do not know what to do with your hands. Have you ever had to do stand-up without a mic, KP?
1,000% a true story. I used to someone counted it one time when I was first starting down in Jacksonville that my hand went in and out of my pocket 18 times during a 5-minute set. And the guy pointed that out to me, and he goes, so what you should do is like maybe go out with like a beer in your hand or something like that, which is great because it solved that. But now I'm an alcoholic. So,
oh, well, you know, there's an upside and a downside to everything. But KP, you probably would have become an alcoholic in any event, right?
It's genetic.
Yeah, don't blame stand up for that.
I mean, stand up just accelerated the process. Let's face it.
More than likely, man. But I do subscribe to your theory, though, that it's if you want to get so let's say you're hosting SNL, you're doing the monologue or whatever. It's the only time that the camera is firmly on you, mm-hmm. and there's nobody else around. So right. If you want to make a guy comfortable, it's not like you don't want to take away props from a prop comic or something like that right before their big gimmick. So if that's what Bill Burr needs to feel a little bit more comfortable, then I mean, let him turn it into the Comedy Cellar. You know what I mean? So it seemed to have worked.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's just something I find adorable because it's something they do 90% of the time when a stand-up host. They did it when like Amy Schumer hosts, when Aziz Ansari hosts, when Louis C.K. used to host.
Mulaney.
And Chris Rock, amazingly enough, when he hosted last week, did not do a hand mic. So he was flying without a net.
Too good for a hand mic, this guy.
Yeah. But I was kind of impressed by that. So what do we think of Bill Burr's actual set?
I liked it, but just because I'm a Bill Burr fan and I know what to expect. But like, I can see if, like, I think I talked about this earlier, like if you're not too familiar with his work, I can see you being bothered by some of the things he said, because he went there. Like he had like a anti-maskers joke. I think it's when he made that Rick Moranis joke, that's when I was like, oh, people are going to have a problem with this.
I like that. I like that.
Not the Black History Month thing. Not the gay pride one.
I mean,
don't touch Rick Moranis.
The gay pride and the black. Like when that came up, I was like, all right. I mean, yeah, that's just a topper to all this. But like the white women jokes is like, oh boy, this is gonna hurt a lot of people. And he kind of knew it too, because at one point, when he was talking about like the John Wayne cancel culture joke and mm-hmm. like it didn't get the response he wanted, he was like, okay, plowing ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. It felt like the audience was very restrained or unresponsive at times, that they were like, oh, we don't want to laugh at that because that offends our sensibilities. I was getting that vibe from it.
Honest question for both of you guys. So I've done the quote socially distant gigs during the pandemic and everything. So I thought it was interesting that, yes, it was a smaller crowd sitting up front that where they would, you know, see him perform the monologue. But I did think it was curious that they were all within, you know, maybe inches of each other.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to do social distancing, but you know, when it comes to me, they should have just spread the people out a little bit more. That would have been an easier vibe, man. But I wonder if that was a game time decision to have everybody sitting pretty much on a bleacher seat next to each other.
Yeah, that seemed to be what they were doing last week as well. They had some shots of the audience during the premiere last week. And yeah, everybody was kind of clustered together in the audience. I know they're testing everybody thoroughly and all that. And, you know, maybe they're just doing that for audio reasons. I don't know.
Yeah, we mentioned that, too. They were all kind of clustered together. And I guess as long as everybody's wearing a mask, that's OK. But I don't know the rules anymore. Who knows? No one's telling us anything. It's all a coin toss.
I don't know. It's a free for all. We live in chaos.
Yes. But yeah, I mean, back to the monologue. Yeah, this was, the joke about, like, you know, white women and how they hijacked the woke movement.
Mm-hmm.
It's a solid joke, but like, when I was looking, I was like, yeah, people are not going to like that. And then, like KP said, the whole gay pride month, like, oh, how'd they get the whole month of June? Like,
yeah,
that seems long for a group of people who weren't enslaved.
And yeah,
you can hear people tighten up over, like, I heard them be like, oh no.
Yeah, it had that vibe. And I mean, I'm sure we've all seen it and felt it in various acts where you say something and the crowd is not with you, and you can just feel them tighten up, just clench, you know, and they're just like, oh nope, we're not gonna laugh at that one. And it really felt like that was what was going on here.
Cowards.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the joke isn't anti-gay. It's just saying, how did they didn't, I guess he was kind of trying to say, like, how did they get the nice month of the year, June? Like,
yeah.
Well, like, black people, you know, we were enslaved and we got, like, February and it's super cold. And, like, so it's not an anti-gay joke, but, like, if you just kind of describe it to someone or you just hear a little bit of it, it could sound like he's, you know, poo-pooing the whole movement, but he's not. It's a very tricky tightrope to walk.
Yeah,
that's why he's
effective,
though, because I wonder if you guys realize how many progressive rednecks are cultivated off of a Bill Burr act where he makes them question the narrative kind of a thing. So it was do you play this game at all, where if you treat Bill Burr like a black comedian, what is he allowed to get away with?
No, I've never played that game before, but it sounds awesome.
Is that a popular game? I've never heard that.
Well, he's very welcomed in the black comic community. You know what I mean? That's like a guy that, again, I think Bill Burr's for everybody.
So, right.
But he's got a thing where it's like a New England ginger is doing bits that resonate with the black community. Or so I remember doing stand up down in Jacksonville or whatever. If you wanted to get good stage time, you had to do the spoken word shows. And so it was it was spoken word mixed in with comedy or whatever. And so that was when those crowds were on your side, you were like, oh, wow, I found something that's for everybody. This is good to go. I think Bill Burr's of that vein where, because he's got a black wife and everything like that. And then obviously I think his original rise to fame was when he was on Chappelle's show. So he's mm-hmm. definitely got some street cred. I'll put it that way. But his thing is that he's able to reach maybe a dumb redneck in a Miller High Life hat and make them sit there and be like, oh, wow, that is kind of messed up. That is weird that this happens. You know, so I think he's I don't want to call him an advocate because I know that that's a bad word or whatever. But he's definitely a dude that he comes across unwoke, but there's some wokeness to his material.
Yeah, I think that puts it really well. And, you know, the thing I like about Bill Burr is, I mean, he's one of those people, he's just always about the joke. And it's not, he's not trying to do like, oh, I should do the PC point of view, or, you know, this is where the joke should be coming from. He's just about what's the funniest joke.
Yeah, that monologue is going to hold up the same way that Norm's did when Norm came back on the show.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
I think that this is going to be a monologue we talk – the same way we talk about the Louis monologue, where it's
mm-hmm.
That's just a monster set that he had on SNL.
Yeah, like when Louis C.K. did that thing, he was like, you know – oh God! If I paraphrase it, I'm going to massacre it. But he talked about how like for pedophiles, having sex with underage kids must be amazing because it's such a huge risk to do.
Yep. Yeah.
And so from that point of view, it must be amazing. And that's the type of thing that most people wouldn't even try to touch. So I admire that as a comic just because it's so edgy or risky. It sounds cliched to say that, but.
Yeah, I mean, like, one of my favorite Bill Burr jokes he's ever done is off his special, I think it's called Let It Go, where he talks about how, like, guys have this thing in them where, like, if you do anything kind of nurturing or smart or caring.
You can call it the what are you a fag bit, okay? Everyone knows what you're talking about.
Yeah. I'm trying not to get canceled, man. But yeah, I mean, but that's a great joke because it's like a joke about kind of toxic masculinity, and he's telling it to his audience, which is full of, like, you know, probably toxic males, and like they're loving it. So it's like, it's a fantastic joke if you haven't, like, heard it or seen it. I highly recommend it because, like, it's a joke about something like his fan base does, and they're able to really laugh at it, and that's like that's an incredible thing. So yeah, and also like on his last special. Like, he has his joke about, like, Elvis, like, watching an Elvis documentary with his wife, which he loves, but then his wife didn't love Elvis. And then they get into why, you know, black people really don't fuck with Elvis like that. And it gets a little bit more, I don't want to keep saying woke, but, like, he's able to see the other side of it. And he's able to, like, joke about it.
He plays in the middle. That's where the funny is in the middle.
Yeah, right, yeah. And I mean, and that's something I love about stand-up is it can really help you understand another person's or another side's point of view on it. And because humor is just so accessible, you know?
Right. And the last thing that Bill Burr did in this monologue that I really liked is at the end of his set, he said, "All right, that's all my time."
Mm-hmm.
Which is like the most comic thing any comedian could ever say.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think you typically hear that at the end of an SNL monologue, but yeah, that was a cool touch.
Yeah, you never hear that. You just hear them say, "All right, we got a great show for you. Blah 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 is here." But he said, "All right, that's my time." It's like that's the mark of a true comic right there.
Yeah, probably muscle memory.
Probably.
Okay, so next we have the first sketch, which was New Normal, which is a group of couples gathering together out back on a deck, and Bill Burr and Kate McKinnon, they say unprecedented instead of unprecedented, and they kind of erupt from that.
Yeah, it's like basically, like you said, they say unprecedented. I guess people do make that mistake. They say unprecedented instead of unprecedented. Like, we all know people who have said, like, the wrong word, and, like, you got to correct them, and they feel kind of dumb for a little bit. But, yeah, this one gets heightened because they've been quarantined for 6 months, like we all have. And it's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I said the wrong word." And then they just kind of flip out. Kate goes kind of overboard and really chews up the scenery in this one.
I'm still mad she's gay.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You got a bit of a Kate McKinnon crush there, KP?
How do you not on that?
Yeah.
Because first of all, she kills it. Everything she plays, I'm like, all right, she's 100% committed.
Yeah.
But no, she's funny chick, man. And then, but there is that thing where you're just like, finally, finally, a funny woman, and she's.
Oh, gee. We may have to put this behind a paywall this episode.
But no, I mean, I know what you mean, KP. She's very attractive, and she's like so talented. It adds to the attraction, and yeah, she has like a real sensual quality to her, and yeah, I got a bit of a Kate McKinnon crush too. You know, I know it could never ever happen, but yeah, I hear what you're saying.
I think her and because Burr's great, don't get me wrong, and everybody else plays their parts and everything, but it was she had to drive so much of that first sketch based off of just sheer personality. She's got like a Will Ferrell thing to her where she can carry a bad sketch into decent territory.
Yeah, yeah. She elevates the material that she's in. Yeah, 100%.
Just like Kobe Bryant.
R.I.P. Black Mamba. But I kind of feel the same way. Like, this sketch was just okay, but the way like Burr and McKinnon like really were doing a lot of the heavy lifting and really amped it up, that it did make it a little bit better.
Yeah, yeah. And I liked there was a neat moment where I think it was Keenan and Ego where Ego was like about to correct them, and Kino was like, "Nope, you don't have to do this. You're just making it worse." It was just a nice small moment that I liked in the sketch.
Right, and then there's throughout the sketch to say like other words incorrectly, like the noon and normal,
mm-hmm.
and for all intent and purposes. But I mean, for the most part, that the sketch was okay. But Kate and Bill kind of, you know, they drove it home a little bit more.
So next we had Sports Debate, which is a TV sports show called The Blitz, where Bill Burr is playing one of the hosts, and he's had a bet with Keenan's character about whether or not Chicago would win, and he's owed a steak dinner. But then Bill Burr is all ready to gloat, but then he quickly gets derailed when Keenan's character starts talking about, "Oh, well, I didn't really watch the game last night because I was watching the news because a black man got shot." And then Bill Burr is in the very awkward position of trying to have to backtrack from what he'd planned to do.
Do you guys watch, I know you're both smart dudes, but like, do you guys watch like sports radio at all? I mean, do you listen or do you watch any of the bullshit on like FS1 or ESPN or anything?
For me, not at all. No, I'm not a sports fan.
I know that one. This is an olive branch to Darren.
Wow. I'm in the same boat. I really don't follow sports at all. I'm too busy watching Marvel movies.
That's well, they killed it. I thought that they had the tone and everything about, you know, sports shows, if you will, daytime sports shows, down to a T, man. They were that was my favorite sketch of the night, to be honest.
Oh, wow, okay. Really?
Okay. Like when I was watching this, I was like, I generally don't even know if The Blitz is a real sports show or not.
You got to follow Skip Bayless on Instagram, man. He's one of the best followers around.
Okay.
What is a Skip Bayless?
Skip Bayless is it's pretty much he's the Natty Bumper Car of sports media.
Oh, wow. That's quite a testimonial.
Wow. Yeah, he's a terrible person.
Last night, you leave
much like Natty Bumper Car. He's a terrible person.
Oh yeah, no, Natty's a terrible person. It's a
friend of the show, Natty Bumper Car. The Blitz. Back to the sketch. So like you said, we see Bill Burr's character kind of backtracking, like his gloating, and then of course we see that he already planned for the people at the steak restaurant to like drop off the steak at the studio, and they drop off the steak, and like he's left feeling like very awkward about it, and
the great prank that backfired.
And he gave him like a large size baby bottle, so like, you know, he could cry over his team losing, but of course now it just seems inappropriate.
And he has the camera guys do like an Instagram filter on Keenan, putting like a pacifier and a baby bonnet on him. So it was just fun because it was all about the awkwardness, and awkwardness is just kind of a bottomless well comedically.
Indeed. I mean, just look at my teenage years if you want to know more about that.
I mean, look at my adult years.
Look at all of our years.
Yeah, look at every year from my birth up to the present moment.
This is huge comedy.
Mm-hmm.
As far as sketch, I thought this was I liked it, but I feel like it was really close to being like really good. Like, I don't know, like it kind of felt like it had like a Chappelle Show maybe vibe to it a little bit.
Uh-huh. And
I mean, I kind of like what they were saying about how, you know, when, you know, black tragedies like this happen, maybe, I guess, you know, white people maybe feel like a little awkward and they have to kind of, you know, I mean, like toward the end of this one point where he was saying, yeah, I feel sorry about this, you know, this man that got shot. And he didn't know the guy's name, even though Keenan's character said it a few minutes earlier.
Yeah.
So like, I think like that part, and I thought this sketch was good. I feel like it could have been better.
They stuck the landing. That's what I liked about it. They took a risk. So I mean,
mm-hmm.
Also we didn't even talk about this part is that, Bill Burr was talking about how annoying it is that people are getting canceled on a very show that canceled somebody. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah. That guy's a friend of mine too, by the way. He's a nice guy. So I was pretty heartbroken that that would have been the reason I would have started DVRing SNL more, would have been to watch him. And I don't even have to say his name. Everybody already knows what we're talking about if they're listening.
You're talking about the fellow who is going to be a cast member last season and then never ended up making it on the show when like some stuff he said on a podcast came to light.
Within 72 hours, we watched somebody's dream die. It was sad. That's just that's all it can be is that, you know, it was very unfortunate that had to happen. But he mentioned that I sat there I'm on the edge of my seat during Burr's monologue. I was like, he's going to fucking say his name.
Is Burr also a friend of his?
I mean, it's hard not to, if you're a comic, it's hard not to root for that guy because I don't want anybody to ever get in trouble for trying to tell jokes, you know?
Well, and, you know, also it seems like we have it like maybe too high of a standard where it's like everything you've ever said from the beginning of time has to work within the present day. And if I'm remembering that story correctly, like the stuff that came out, it wasn't all that old. It was maybe like under a year old, something like that.
Yeah, it was, Jesus, it was, this is how weird it was. This is the only reason I remember this is because I landed in Tampa, on a Thursday. I was doing the full weekend at Side Splitters. And before my weekend was done, he was fired from SNL and had also announced SNL within that same time span.
Yeah. But. Yeah, that I remember when we talked about that last year, you know, it was about a year ago now, and we were largely amazed by the speed at which it all went down. We were expecting him to at least have we're expecting Shane Gillis to at least get like a show or two under his belt before it came to an end, you know. So it was surprising.
No, it stinks that way. It's a, you never want to I think about how many good moments we probably got robbed from him not being on the show or whatever. Cause it's like, if you found something when Norm takes the path less traveled mm-hmm. you know, for a joke or something like that, if one of his jokes was deemed problematic, we wouldn't have gotten Norm as the greatest Weekend Update anchor of all time.
You have opinions. Love it.
Well, that the only other, I think about this too, man. Cause, I don't know Mike Che, but like we've hung out a couple of times. Mm-hmm. He takes some fucking chances too, man. So I'm waiting for it to catch up to him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm like a broken record on Update at this point because like Michael Che's joke writing is so above what we get out of Colin Jost. You know, he takes more chances. He goes further. He has more original takes.
Yeah,
I mean, the imbalance that we get in Update, it really bugs me these days.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get to that during this Weekend Update because this Weekend Update was, I think it was on fire. But we'll mm-hmm. get to that.
You think
we'll
they upped their game to try to keep up with Burr?
Maybe, or maybe they had like more of a comfort level after last week. They're kind of like dipping their toe into the water. Like, how far can we joke about Trump getting coronavirus?
Right. And, because there was like a week ago where he got it, and we were all like, "Oh my God, is he gonna die within like days or something?" So they were kind of like, you know, pussyfooting around it. But like now, a week later, he's back to his, you know, terrible self. So they're like, "All right, we can make fun of him again."
There was actually a line I really liked during the cold open where Kate McKinnon, as the moderator, she asked Mike Pence, like, how is the president? And he says, oh, thank you for asking. And she says, I wasn't asking out of sympathy, Mike. I was asking with a simmering rage from his incompetence and a sadistic hope that he is not well. I was so impressed with that line, and it really – it kind of caught my mood too. So
that's a good one.
That was a good one.
Next sketch. Oh, wow. We're zipping through these. Enough is enough.
Yeah, just a lot of brevity here at 40 minutes in.
Right? Right.
By our standards, this is brevity, KP.
So the enough is enough sketch is a Beck Bennett sketch, a Beck joint. And he mm-hmm. kind of he plays like, I don't want to say a social media influencer, but I mean, he introduces himself as Benji from the show The Buddies on Nintendo TV, and he's basically making like a one of those videos he's hoping goes viral. That's anti-president, anti-Trump video. Those, those self-important, self-grandizing, you know, you're not my president, like that spoken
word. Yeah, and he literally says, like, oh, let's get to 1 million shares by midnight. And, you know, so it's kind of obvious it's more about the self-promotion than the statement he's making.
Right, and then he challenges, like, some other celebrities to do the same thing, like DiCaprio and Jason Momoa and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah, he says, I tagged Leonardo DiCaprio, Trevor Noah, and Jason Momoa. And then, like, right after he's, like, really satisfied with himself, and then he's immediately getting calls, and he's like, oh, what? I should take it down? Oh, it's bad? Oh, okay. This reminded me a lot of the sketch they did a couple years ago about the Kendall Jenner Pepsi commercial, where, and that was also with Beck, where he played the director, the writer and director of that, and he's like, oh, yeah, oh, no, that's really tone deaf? Oh, I shouldn't even touch it? Oh, okay.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just fun. It's fun to watch a character realize, like, how big of an idiot they're being. And so I found this entertaining in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I thought this was okay. Yeah, it seemed like a retread of something else we've seen before, and I couldn't put my finger on it until you just mentioned the Pepsi commercial sketch. So I was like, oh, yeah, this is that again. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was like, meh. I thought it was so-so.
I thought it was most interesting that we got a little Jason Momoa cameo there. He's on the phone. He's saying, like, hey, untag me in this. So I guess Jason Momoa is officially a friend of the show now.
I guess so. Like, yeah, he's a buddy of SNL.
Yeah, they seem to like to call on him for the cameos. What'd you think of this, KP?
I like the dude who did it is so convincing that mm-hmm. This is a weird time to hold a mirror up to society because everyone's so fraudulent that it's hard to tell what's parody and what's reality sometimes.
Yes. So,
his video was pretty much, I was like, I was waiting for a TikTok where it was going to be like him dancing with his dog in a second. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He pretty much tattooed it. That is the kind of attitude of a lot of those people out there. And you said self-aggrandizing and self-important earlier, Darren. Well said, because that's what it is.
Yeah.
I know all the big words. I know kismet. I know self-aggrandizing and self-important.
Kismet sounds like it should be a gay dating app.
Kismet? Oh, yeah.
That's a great line, Gavey.
If anybody's looking to start a dating app like such, you can go ahead and take that word kismet. It's yours.
We're actually going to start a gay dating app after this for fans of the SNL Nerds. It'll be Kismet, the official gay dating app of the SNL Nerds.
At Non-Pro Studios.
Exactly. That's where everyone will meet for their first date, at the Non-Pro Studios.
This is the first I'm hearing of this, but I am on board.
That's right. Okay. And we'll put KP up as our spokesman for Kismet, the gay dating app.
And right. It's I'm actually, like they say, homophobia, like you're afraid of gay people's lifestyle. Or I'm actually afraid of gay people because they just have a body fat percentage that makes me feel, a little bit concerned about my belly.
You're right. Right. Yeah. You feel very inferior. I get that.
I do, man. That's Hitler's master race was the gays.
Christ almighty.
They take care of themselves. They are good at maintaining.
Shredded like a salad.
So next we had Mr. Jack White. This was kind of an interesting story because he was a last minute substitute for Morgan Wallen, who was the original musical guest. And Morgan Wallen, he got into a bit of trouble this week when they found footage of him not doing the proper COVID.
I'm not even trying to be joke heavy right now. I just now found out that Morgan is a dude.
I had to Google it during the show last week. And when the picture came up of somebody with facial hair, I was like, okay, Morgan's a dude. All right. Good to know.
It is one of those ambiguous names where it could be either or. But yeah. I think it's pronounced Wallen. I don't know if it's Wallen or Wallen, but
okay.
Either way, he was supposed to be the guest for this week's show. Then somebody saw him on the streets of Alabama, not socially distancing, not wearing a mask, making out with college girls, took pictures of it, put it up on the interwebs, it went viral. And then SNL was like, yeah, you can't do the show. You can't do this no more. But I was actually kind of surprised that, like, I also saw Morgan put up a video saying, yeah, I messed up. This is on me. I respect SNL's decision to not have me. This was like, I hold no ill will. This is all me. I took total responsibility.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like a pretty good apology, and I believe Lauren even said, like, oh, you know, we'll find a time to have you back. I mean, I think it was just more about the safety thing than anything else. They just didn't want him coming into the studio and endangering people.
Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised by it, because, like, you know, in this time of where everybody's angry and everybody's boycotting and protesting and just, like, so much vitriol everywhere, I really thought this was, like, going to be a thing where it was like, oh, the lamestream, the liberal cucks, the cultural elites don't want a good old boy up there who just maybe has COVID, boycott SNL. I thought it was going to be a thing, and it turned out not to be a thing. Like, it ended amicably, and I was like, oh, wow, that's refreshing to hear. I don't know. That's a refreshing good take.
I've heard Lauren is pretty cool, like, in terms of, like, whenever a controversy arises, that he's very, I'm going to use a word. I'm going to try to impress Darren. Magnanimous?
Ooh.
Yeah,
it's a nice word.
Now you're gonna lose your southern base.
That's well, he's apparently Lauren's pretty cool about stuff like that, though, where he's like, hey, listen, so this is what the culture is right now, we got to deal with it, you know, I'm not supporting this, but I'm not you know, blah blah blah, whatever. So in terms of the PC thing, and then also, like, just navigating the news in general, I mean, he's Lauren is super famous without ever having any sort of controversy tied to him, really.
Well, I mean, I think I feel like Lorne Michaels is one of those people who's been around for so long. He's seen it all at this point. And so he's probably not too fazed by most anything that comes around. I mean, even this, I mean, he's putting on a live late night comedy show in the middle of a pandemic. And he's just so matter of fact about it. He's just like, oh, yeah, we're testing more and we're doing this and we're doing that. And we, you know, and he just rolls with it, you know. It's impressive.
It's the white wine drinkers, man. You can't trust them.
he seems very zen about everything.
Namaste. So filling in, we got Mr. Jack White, which...
I didn't grab a beer real quick. I apologize.
Oh, yeah, no problem. We had Mr. Jack White, which the news broke yesterday. And I think I speak for everyone. I said, oh, wow, that's a bit of an upgrade.
Definite upgrade. I was very excited. I was like watching the Today Show before I went into work yesterday morning, and they were like, "Oh yeah, who's going to replace Morgan Whalen or Wallen or whatever the hell his name was?"
Wuhan.
And they didn't get to the announcement before I had to leave to work, so I like texted Darren very quickly. I was like, "They're going to announce it soon. You know, be sure to check it out so you can post it." So,
you got it, boss.
Just because Darren is working from home right now, I am not. So I knew it would be easier for him to post it on the social medias.
Yeah, and then we found out it was Jack White, somebody who I've been a fan of for years, like since like the White Stripe days. And I think, you know, he's an extremely talented musician, one of the best guitarists to do it. And and these two performances, he just knocked it out the ballpark.
Go ahead.
I looked into it. Like, his last song was Lazaretto, which was off of his, I think, like, second-to-last album. But the first song he did was interesting. It was like a medley.
It was a medley of three songs. It was Don't Hurt Yourself, which was a collaboration he did with Beyonce, Ball and Biscuit, which was a White Stripes song, and Jesus is Coming Soon, which is a song about the 1918 flu epidemic.
Yeah, I looked that up too. Jesus is Coming Soon is a song by Blind Willie Johnson, which is the most bluesiest blues singer name you could think of.
Yes, yeah.
And it basically goes, we done told you, our God's done warned you, Jesus is coming soon. Great disease was mighty, and the people were sick everywhere. It was an epidemic. It floated through the air. I mean, come on.
It's something else. I mean, you know, very on the nose, but it really speaks to this moment in time, you know?
Yeah, very much so. So, I mean, the fact that he you know, had the foresight to do that and like include a song that came out like, you know, decades ago.
100 years ago.
100,000. Yeah, I got to find out what year exactly this came out. But yeah,
It was about the 1918 flu epidemic. I don't know if it came out in 1918. Probably not.
Probably. But yeah, like the fact that, oh, this song that came out way back when and it's still relevant today. Pretty incredible.
He's not as cool as there is in terms of being a rock star. Like people say rock is dead or whatever, but Jack Black's kind of doing the thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. He is one of the like the last true rock stars. And he just brought the house down. He blew the roof off the joint, both of his numbers. It was amazing. And his drummer was amazing. I saw his name on the YouTube. His drummer's Daru Jones. So much energy, man.
Yeah, I mean, did you see the way his like drums were set up? Because they were like,
yeah,
they weren't standing upright. They were like kind of tilted forward, so the drummer had to like get up out of his seat a lot of times in order to bang it.
Well, he apparently sets up his kit, you know, to accommodate his style, because he'll like, you know, just get up and drum standing up if the spirit moves him. So that's why he sets them up like that.
Yeah, I've never seen that before. I was like, wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, that was something else. I was just like, damn, I gotta get some more Jack White stuff. This was, I mean, I don't think we're going to see a better musical guest this season.
Yeah, we should also mention on his second performance, the Lazaretto, he was playing a very special guitar.
We posted about this. This was something that he got from Eddie Van Halen, who unfortunately passed away this week.
What?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you just hearing about Eddie, or did you not know about the guitar?
No, it's the Eddie Van Halen thing was wild, but it was everyone's mourning collectively. Like I do feel this is one of those celebrity deaths, like a Robin Williams thing, where it resonates with the entire country.
Yeah, right. I mean, because Eddie was one of those people who was just around for so long, and he had such an amazing career. Yeah, I mean, even if you weren't like a huge Van Halen fan, I think you had to just appreciate the man's talent.
Yeah. I mean, Eruption alone, like if you listen to that and you're like, you can't believe it's just all those sounds are coming out of one guitar from one guy.
And mm-hmm.
like, I still listen to it now. I'm like, this is incredible. Like this is like unearthly. This dude's amazing.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
Bad for I mean, kid from the Netherlands, right?
Yeah. I mean, you see somebody who is just, when you see somebody who is just so good at that one thing that they do, and you're seeing somebody literally do something better than anyone else is capable of doing it, it's just something to say. And Jack White also did some Eddie Van Halen tapping on his guitar during the second number.
Yes, I noticed that too. So that was like his little nod to Van Halen. I think he said when he posted it up on like Instagram and stuff, he said like, I'm not even going to insult Van Halen by covering one of his songs, so I'm just gonna play this Van Halen guitar and maybe do like a little shout out to him, and that'll be it.
I mean
both Jack White, Van Halen, two amazing guitarists. Like I'm trying to learn how to play guitar at home, and I still have trouble with the G chord, so the fact that they're doing what they're doing is like mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, it's something else. I mean, it just blew me away. And, you know, it's unfortunate circumstances for him to come on the show, but man, am I glad they got him.
This was, like I said, I know I said it before, but this was a definite upgrade.
Yeah, 100%.
How funny is it, too, that even though New York is, quote, dead, it's still, if you live there, you can get the phone call still. It's kind of a cool feeling.
Yeah.
Call you up on the bat phone. He's like, I'll be there toot sweet.
Jack White just like, you know, came in and I picture him like sliding down a bat pole or something like that.
I can see you know, that.
He just gets a call from the Lorne hotline, you know. I'll be right there, Lorne.
I'm on my way.
Yeah. You just know Jack White came in into 30 Rock in some super cool way.
Yeah. Jack White.
Exactly. So next we had a weekend update with Colin Jost and Michael Che.
This one, I'm going to go ahead and say this might be one of my favorite weekend updates. Like this was a strong one for me.
Yeah, yeah. I think definite upgrade from last week. Jay got a lot darker and edgier with his jokes, where he said about Trump. It feels like a car crash, and the only survivor is the drunk driver.
I was like, geez,
that's just like a perfect joke, man.
It's good. It's good. Like, I feel like he was saying like a lot of jokes he wanted to say, like last week, but he had to hold back, so he's letting it all go. Like this week.
Yeah. Yeah. Like last week was dipping the toe in the water. This week he's wading in.
Yeah. And even like Joe's had a few good jabs where he said like, you know, well, if Trump had a near death experience and he learned nothing from it, it's like seeing somebody who smokes through a hole in their neck.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a good one.
So yeah, that was another good one. I also like the line they were talking about how sexy hand sanitizer is apparently a popular Halloween costume. And he says, sexy hand sanitizer, which I think is just lube. And there was also a nonsensical joke that Jay had where they were talking about a 50-year-old shark called Queen of the Ocean. And Jay just went, because he's gay as hell. I mean, just the delivery of that just really, really got me.
I think you may have hit the head on the nose, or however the saying goes.
You're so close to having blue collar experience right now, Darren.
Thank you. I'm a man of the people. Well, yeah, I do think maybe because of the fact that Burrow was there, maybe like a lot of the comedians, you know, like Che, maybe stepped up their game a little bit, maybe to be as edgy as Burrow is. Because like there was that other joke that Che had where he was talking about how Trump was like injected with this sort of serum, I guess, that was made from the stem cells of aborted fetuses.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying, oh, it's very convenient that Republicans are always against abortion until the stem cells can save their lives, or when they get their daughter pregnant.
Yes.
Which is like, I was like, damn, Jay's on fire tonight.
That was really good. Yeah. I mean, I just...
You step your game up, though. Like, you know, if Burr's there, Burr's like, oh, well, you're gonna be a fucking hack on Weekend Update.
I got to impress Burr.
Gonna toe the company line.
Yeah. No, it is effective when your buddies give you shit and it kind of pushes you to do better.
Absolutely. So, and then the first guest we had behind the desk is Kate McKinnon as Dr. Wayne We Notice.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know I don't even know how to describe this.
I fast forwarded, if that means anything to you.
You just said you liked her a few minutes ago.
No, she's great, but I also know when I'm in for some bullshit. So I felt the vibe on that one. It's like, all right, we're moving on.
It was definitely longer than it needed to be. It was like 5 minutes, which I feel like was probably about twice as long as it needed to be. Like at one point. Colin just stops her and says, are you saying we know this or are you just saying your last name? And Kate started cracking. And the moment that people seem to be talking about is Colin at one point just says, Kate, are you okay? And she just says, I'm obviously not. And she says, this is something I started doing to cope. I have a lot of wigs and mustaches. And she's just talking about how she's living in this uncertain place because we don't know who will win the election. We don't know when the pandemic will be over. All this. So it's the joke here is, I guess, that Kate is starting to lose it.
Yeah. At one point, she tries to take Joseph's blood pressure and like the little squeezy ball thing makes like a little like squeak toy noise.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really felt like they literally had nothing written down for this. They were just.
I did like when she was taking his blood pressure. She doesn't even wrap the band around his arm. She just drapes it over his arm. I thought that was cute just because it was never commented on.
Yeah, like it's literally just kind of Kate riffing and being goofy and silly. Like
this, it's written here. I kind of feel where KP was coming from on this is I wouldn't have minded fast forwarding through this because I feel like they were amusing themselves more than the audience.
Yeah,
it was just kind of Kate trying to crack Colin up, and I don't like seeing that when they're just trying to crack each other up. Because it's like, well, you know, you're doing a comedy show. It should be about making the audience laugh, not making each other laugh.
I'm glad you're having a good time, but I'm sitting here waiting for something to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. It just felt very kind of self-indulgent to me.
Very true. See, using the big words again, our Southern days. Go on.
Indulgent is a big word.
For some people it is.
I mean,
you really think lowly of the good people of the South, don't you, Darren?
Wow.
I am a cultural elite. You got me there.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Please don't cancel my co-host, KP.
You can't cancel something that doesn't exist, fellas.
We have over 500 Twitter followers, man. Come on.
I can't find the lie.
You guys have a good show. Don't get me wrong.
I can't find the lie. next, we had Pete Davidson talking about J.K. Rowling's transphobic comments. So this was I liked this. He just said, you know, I know what I've figured out. I'm never getting another tattoo in my life. I got a Harry Potter tattoo because I'm not psychic. And now he's got this thing representing this person who is now, I hate using this word, problematic.
Yeah.
The premise of a tattoo aging poorly on a moral standpoint is one of the funniest premises I've ever thought of.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's I would never get a tattoo because I can't think of anything in my life that I like enough that I'd be like, yes, I want this on me forever.
What about the logo for the monkeys? Huh?
I mean, you know, I like the monkeys. Do I want the monkeys on my body for the rest of time? I don't know.
What about...
It's a nice logo. Don't get me wrong.
It's a funky logo. I dig it. I'm trying to think. I don't know, like an REM logo or something like that. You wouldn't want that or nothing?
You know, again, love REM, but no, I don't feel the need. Now, KP, I know you're a man who has a tattoo or two. You've got... The Emerald Isles on you.
I do. I have a couple. no, it's I don't regret either of my tattoos. Don't get me wrong. I picked correct, if you will, but I did think it was interesting though that in boot camp when I was in the Navy, they set you aside if you have tattoos because they have to determine whether or not they're gang tattoos.
And
So I got a little too smart for myself, and they said, "What's that tattoo represent?" And I was like, "The Republic of Ireland," and they were just like, "Oh, so this kid's in the IRA." Boom! I got investigated by like two or three people after that because it was I got a little too clever for my own good.
Wow.
Yeah, not a great thing when they're just like, "All right, so you're in the IRA, right? Let's looking back. Do you have any family over in Belfast? What's your deal?" So,
how long did that process take?
It was in. I'll tell you what, it was about 45 minutes, but it felt like 3 days in terms of the fear of boot camp combined with that.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Doesn't pay to crack jokes when you arrive in boot camp, I'm sure.
I was a dum-dum.
Yeah. Stripes did not lie to us, Darren.
Stripes is all facts. Stripes didn't teach us. As we
That movie is a documentary, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. We've been saying that for years. all right, back to Pete Davidson. J.K. Rowling, he also talked about how he's very close to J.K. Rowling because he himself looks like Dobby the house elf if he became a TikTok rapper. But the only difference is Pete is a real person and Dobby's film gets released in theaters.
Yeah. A lot of funny stuff in this monologue. I liked how he later on he said, like, I'm half goblin. And at the very end, he's just like, you know, actually, I've never read any of the Harry Potter books. I just saw part of Azkaban on a plane once.
Right. This was good. He also had that joke about how, like, you can sort of see J.K. Rowling's bias in the past movies because, like, all the banks are controlled by, like, you know, Jewish looking goblins, which is something I remember being a thing back in the day. And like, and he's saying like, it's no coincidence all the goblins look like Alan Dershowitz.
The Dersh. This was good. This was the sort of thing that's like, you know, right in Pete's wheelhouse. So I thought he did a nice job with it.
Yeah. I mean, as far as weekend updates go, I think this weekend update was a big improvement over last week. I really like this one.
Definitely stronger than last week's.
Absolutely. And so next sketch up, we have Don Pauly, where Bill Burr plays Don Pauly, who's the member, the head of a crime family, and he's just got out of prison, and he's like talking to his crime buddies, crime bros. What do you call them? Mafia pals?
Your cousins. And,
cousins, yeah. All right. Oh, that's the word? Okay.
What we go with.
We. Okay. All right.
IRA. he's learning that he's been he's been in the joint for so long that, you know, the mafia has changed a bit. Like, he comes in talking about, like, hey, what, this used to be a tough gang. And, like, you know, now you got the Mexicans taking over, and then the mafia's like, whoa, that's a little insensitive, Don. With all due respect, we don't like to use words like that around here.
Yeah, he's basically finding out the world has passed him by in the last 20 years, and he's not as woke as the rest of the family is at this point.
Right. And I also like how they, for some reason, there's this quick little jab they give to Jamie Kennedy, where he's saying, oh, am I being punked? Not being punked. It's like, oh, is this a joke? It's like a video. Is like Jamie Kennedy going to come out here with the video camera? And then they're like, who's Jamie Kennedy? It's like, no, he's the guy who does the prank shows.
You mean Ashton Kutcher?
Kutcher does punked.
Yeah. This was, I wasn't nuts about this. I felt like the pacing was off. At some points, it's like just dead silence from the audience. I feel like this was better in concept than in execution.
I would say a read well, probably.
Yeah.
Oh, what do you mean by that?
You mean
a read well in the table read?
Oh, yeah. The concept is fucking great. It's execution debatable.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt like they were just like a little off, like the energy wasn't where it should have been, you know?
Yeah. I feel like there are a bunch of parts of this I liked, but I feel like maybe the energy was off, or it was, I don't know. Again, it was like really close to being really good, but I don't know if it quite got there. There was that one line that I really liked where the Don says, I can't believe you all turned into a bunch of queers. And then they're like, whoa, we don't say that here. And then the one mob guy, like, gets offended because he identifies as queer. So he takes a wellness day and leaves and works from home. And he's like, whoa, what? And the Don's like, what did I say? Is there something wrong? And the guy's like, he's very sensitive. And then Don's like, he's a freaking murderer. He's like, no, they're a freaking murderer. That line I thought was pretty great.
I felt like when I rewatched this sketch this morning, I felt like this could have worked a little better if it was like, say, Norm MacDonald in the Bill Burr role. Because Norm MacDonald was always good at reacting to the insanity around him, like that West Side Story sketch where they're in the street gang. And everybody starts doing the dance moves and singing songs, and Norm's just like, oh, what's going on here? And it's like, I got a song for you. You know, when you were dancing, I got stabbed by a Puerto Rican. So I felt like Norm's energy could have really made this sketch work.
I could see that. And then towards the end of the sketch, like, we have new cast member Punky Johnson coming in, saying, who's like now part of the mob, and the Don's like, hey, who's the black chick? It's like, oh, no, this is Gladys. She's here for diversity. We got really slammed on Twitter because of hashtag Mafia So White.
I do like the concept of the Mafia having a Twitter presence and then reacting to becoming a hashtag. I find that very funny.
Yeah, like, I feel like this was really close to being really good, but, yeah, something was off and it didn't quite get there. So it just landed on being pretty good.
Yeah. I feel like the performances just weren't there. Yeah. Maybe it was better at table read. Maybe it was better in dress. I don't know, but it didn't quite work for the live show.
Yeah, it happens.
Yep.
Okay. And now we have our final sketch of the night, a pre-tape, the Sam Adams sketch. This is a Streeter Seidel joint. And it's basically like, even he tweeted out, this is like a spiritual cousin of the Dunkin' Donuts commercial from a few years back with Casey Affleck. And so in this sketch is basically Sam Adams is advertising their new pumpkin ale beer. They have a
Jacko pumpkin Boston ale. Yes.
Right. So of course they have like a table set up in a supermarket in Boston. And then they just have people tasting it and have real Bostonians give their impression of it. And of course, you know, people are like, oh, this tastes great. This is great for sweater weather. And then, of course, you have, you know, Mr. Boston himself, Bill Burr, drinking it and just being disgusted by it.
Yeah. He takes a sip, immediately spits it out, and he's like, what the fuck is that?
Do you guys remember this too, by the way? A little tie-in factor is in the Samuel Jackson sketch on Chappelle's Show.
Oh, that's right.
Bill Burr orders a Sam Jackson.
That's right. Oh, you know, I didn't make that connection, but you're totally right. Yeah, he's one of the guys in that sketch.
Samuel L. Jackson, it's my beer.
One of the all-time greats on that show.
Yeah, yeah. I can't. It's hard to believe that show and that sketch are as old as they are now. I mean, because that was on like at the tail end of the 90s, early 2000s, I think.
Yeah, early aughts.
I was in high school. Yeah, that was because every kid was screaming, "I'm Rick James, bitch." That was like the last time that something took over on Comedy Central, you know?
I know. That was it really went viral, man.
But I
like this. I liked Bill Burr. He was like picking a fight with his son, Mikey Day. I like that they're both wearing masks and they're just constantly below their chins. I don't think they ever pulled their masks up for any reason.
Nope.
And this was just short and sweet. It was like 2 minutes, 10 seconds, but just short, but really funny. This was probably a sketch of the night for me.
Yeah, I'd say so. There was this one point. There's like two things that Bill did in the sketch that I really liked. One was where he chugged the entire beer,
mm-hmm.
and he was like, I don't like that.
Yeah.
And he talked about the beer to the camera saying, oh, this is the type of beer that somebody brings to your house for a party, and it sits in your fridge for 8 months.
Yeah.
And then 8 months later, your friend's like, hey, you got any beer? And they're like, yeah, I got this. Because that hit home for me as someone who's had those type of beers in my fridge. It's like, yep, that's...
I also like that Bill Burr's character has like a cast on his arm that's like never commented on or explained at all.
Yeah, I also noticed like there was like something blurred out on his cast. I guess showing that somebody drew something like really phallic or profane on it, so they blurred it out. Like I was constantly being like, what did somebody draw on your cast that they had to blur out?
Oh, that's funny. I didn't notice that. That's really nice attention to detail there.
Absolutely. Yeah, KP, what'd you think of this one?
It was it's a win for me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No, I got a kick out of it. And then again, Burr is a underrated actor.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, did you happen to see the King of Staten Island?
I didn't, even though I got it was actually crazy. This was Lynn Coplitz is a friend of mine, and she was telling me that she was giving me the breakdown, but she couldn't say the name of the movie.
Uh-huh.
So when I was driving back and forth with her to gigs or whatever, it would be her telling me, she's like, oh, yeah, so I was hanging out with Marissa Tomei all day today, blah, 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 and this and that. And she couldn't tell me what the gig was. And then finally it all came out. I was like, you bastard. That's.
Yeah, we watched it a couple months ago for the podcast. We actually got to talk to the writer for it, Dave Sirius.
Good dude.
And yeah, and we really liked
Cyrus,
it.
Right? Cyrus.
Cyrus. Cyrus. I'm sorry. And Bill Burr is really good in it. He's a good actor, man.
He's got some chops, man. I think that was on display. Again, I think he carried a lot of that sketch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was obviously like just right in his wheelhouse because he either knows a ton of Boston guys like that, or he's been that Boston guy, or both. So it was just a really
ironically be who it is that you've surrounded yourself with. So I'm I get that because I've worked excavation enough, but I'm not an excavation guy, if that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's what Burr is for New England.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he said it a bunch of times that like, When people approach him for roles, they go to him for like pretty much the same thing, like angry blue collar Bostonian dude, like, you know, angry cop, angry construction worker. So like he can play that part like really well, like he taps into it like no other. But like with the King of Staten Island, I think he showed a little bit more range where he showed like he kind of reeled it back a bit and was like a little bit more sensitive in a few scenes, a little bit more quieter in a few scenes, and I was like, oh, I haven't seen him do that, and he's doing it pretty well. So
I wonder if his model is this because this is a guy that's like super important to me, is Edward Burns.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, nice.
He was always able to navigate the blue collar into the artsy field thing super well. So Edward Burns is always a guy for me. I wonder if that's like a dude where Burr's like, yeah, I could do that. You know, can't do nothing else, but I'll do that.
Yeah, I feel like Kevin Smith kind of does that a little bit. I mean, earlier in his career when he was like doing Clerks and whatnot, where he was like a blue collar dude, but like, you know, he had some like dialogue in there that was a little bit more, I don't know, brainier or headier or, you know, esoteric or whatever.
As a blue collar guy, I can go ahead and safely say this: Kevin Smith is a fucking nerd.
Damn.
I like him. Don't get me wrong. His fan base has definitely been very good to me, but Kevin Smith's definitely got a there's a blue collar thing in terms of like the workmanship. I agree with you wholeheartedly on that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the fact that he put his first movie on like a couple credit cards, that's you got to admire that. The sort of do it yourselfish.
He's hard not to root for.
As
is Bill Burr. And you,
And you actually do have a connection with Kevin Smith. You did a roast for Brian O'Halloran, one of the actors in his movies.
Brian's a good man. That's guys, I'm very happy to have a friendship with him or whatever. But it's he's a very interesting guy. I'll put it that way. He's got a lot going on too, man. But those guys are getting killed this year by not getting to go to the Comic Cons and shit like that, which,
you know,
I know you guys have been both there as fans and presenters, I think, right?
Yeah, yeah. I've really missed doing Comic Cons this year. Like this weekend was supposed to be the New York Comic Con, and under normal circumstances, I'd be there for at least a day or two of it. But haven't gotten to do any. You know, the big one I do, East Coast Comic Con, they've canceled for 2011 or 2021 as well, just because it takes a year to plan the show. And it's going to be a long time before we get to do mass gatherings like that again, I think.
Damn. Oh, well, way to bring down the party, guys. All right.
Yeah, Jesus, man. I was I thought that was going to be a hopeful moment for all of us here on the show, and
here we are.
We're a doom and gloom podcast, KP.
Sorry. It's been a rough year. I'm not okay, you guys.
But you're fading well.
Exactly. You know, fake it till you make it. That's my philosophy.
We notice. Hey, callback.
So, I mean, what did you guys think of the show overall, though? I thought, although it had its moments, I thought it was kind of a weak episode.
I think for the most part, I actually thought it was a little bit better than the Chris Rock episode. Like, the Weekend Update, I thought was stronger. The monologue was, you know, just pure insanity, but good insanity. The Sam Adams sketch I liked. And, everything else, I feel like it was, I know I said this before, but I feel like a lot of the sketches were, like, really close to being really good, but it didn't quite get there. But, you know, the Don Pauly and the Blitz, like, I was like, you're almost there. If you tweak it, like, another rewrite, like, you're right there to being really great, but it didn't quite get there. But, overall, Weekend Update, I like Sam Adams. I like the monologue. I like, and Jack White, of course. Like, so yeah. With those four things, put it over last week's episode for me.
Yeah. Well, it's like what Lauren always says: is the show doesn't go on because it's ready. The show goes on because it's 11:30.
This is true.
Jesus, so, I like that quote.
Yeah, that's that's great. Very insightful, right?
Yeah, this is the way.
Yeah. What'd you think of it overall, KP?
I'm not trying to be a contrarian here either, but it's, for me, SNL it's a show that I thought I was a fan of, but I'm actually fans of the people that were on it. So it was, again, I, you guys know I have a pretty well documented, fandom of Colin Quinn, but,
yes.
So to me, I used to watch SNL just for Update, and this Update was fucking fantastic. So if that, typically for me, that was the high water mark of any show. Cause I used to watch it. I think it was on, what was it? VH1 used to run.
Oh yeah. Reruns.
They would do the reruns of, pretty much the entire season. You get like 5 episodes in a row. And, so imagine my confusion as a kid when I finally watched SNL for the first time and I was like, it's 90 minutes. There's a whole extra half hour.
What?
Right. Yeah. Cause usually when they rerun it, they put it into an hour time slot and they cut out a lot of the stuff that doesn't work that great.
Which is hilarious, man. But you know what? In the face of a pandemic with a great guest like Bill Burr, I do feel I'm not even being a jerk. I feel like Bill Burr is a get for SNL at this point.
Agreed. He definitely like shook things up in this episode, which like, you know, SNL, I mean, we've mentioned like it does need a little bit of a shaking up these days. And he definitely kind of rattled some cages. And
well, they get too corporate sometimes. So it's you feel bad because you're like, these are clearly talented people that want to do something good, but there's restraints, you know? So I feel like Bill Burr is one of those guys where they're like, oh, if you give him any restraints, he's going to bail. And then what's bigger news, Bill Burr hosting SNL or Bill Burr leaving midweek at SNL?
Yeah. Oh, God. Can you imagine if they'd lost both the host and the musical guest days before the show?
Oh, it would be they would find a way to persevere. But I mean, what a great friggin' 96 hours of news media that would be.
Yeah. Yeah.
They would have been like, hey, Jack White, can you learn these lines for this sketch?
or, you know, they'd probably just have Jim Carrey or Maya Rudolph host since they were already around.
They got a spare guest in the pocket. Interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, that's why it pays to cast, you know, to have ringers in there like that.
They would get Matt Damon to play Bill Burr.
I kind of want to see that now.
They are Bostonians.
I bet he'd do a great Bill Burr.
Oh, without a doubt.
I'm not trying to be a dick. Yeah. Oh, jeez.
But well, next week the SNL train rolls on with new host Issa Rae and returning musical guest Justin Bieber.
Issa Rae.
Issa Rae. Okay, I'm mispronouncing names right and left this week.
Yeah, sorry, it's unprecedented.
Unprecedented. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the Issa Rae episode, I'm looking forward to. I'm a big fan of the show Insecure. I've been watching her since her web series Awkward Black Girl came out a number of years ago, and like I think she's really funny, really smart, and really talented actress. And I'm looking forward to it. I mean, Justin Bieber, yeah. I'm like whatever on, but Issa Rae, like I'm like I want to see what she can bring.
Yeah, I'm coming to her pretty cold. So yeah, I'm going to be pretty much discovering her for the first time next week because I haven't really seen her previous work. So,
all right. Well, this will be a learning experience for you.
It will. It will. I'll expand my horizons a bit.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. So I think that's about it for us for this week. KP, do you have anything you want to plug? Any cool gigs you got coming up?
Listen to American Loser.
Yeah.
No, it's Loser's a fun show. Like I said, do it with my dad. According to my calendar, my comedy career is over.
No, it's never awesome. Begin.
Well, I'll plug this one weird thing. This is crazy. I try to support anybody that's still trying to open up and do things. So obviously Stress has the outdoor facility here in Jersey. And then I think Bananas is back open. But this is the coolest one. If you want a perk to the pandemic, every Wednesday from now till Thanksgiving, Joey Diaz is going to be playing Uncle Vinny's on Wednesday nights, just working out new material and everything. And let me tell you, he says he's working it out, but goddamn, is it fucking funny. So...
Holy moly. All right, guys, check that out.
Well, that's cool. Darren, you had your first show back in several months. I think you said it was your first show since January. You had that last night. How'd that go for you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I did a show last night at the Town Pub in beautiful Bloomfield, New Jersey, literally minutes away from my apartment. So, like, I had no excuse not to show up. And it went well. Like, I was a little nervous because – like you said, I hadn't done stand-up since January. I wrote a few new jokes that I'd never done before. And I was like, oh, I don't know if this crowd is ready for it. I don't know if I still got it. And then once I got up on stage, the crowd couldn't have been more welcoming. The jokes, the new stuff I wrote hit. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is pretty great. And, of course, also on the show with me, it was Donna V's show, the great Donna V. And also on the lineup with me was Aaron Wahlberg and Nettie Bumpercar, two people who we've had on the podcast. And everybody did amazing and killed. And it was like, great. Like, I was like, yeah, big old, yeah, Nettie Bumpercar. And like, it went really well. I was really happy I did it. It was a great show. And I was like, oh, wow, I think I'm back. I think the kid's back. I still got it.
Nice. Nice. So, well, that's cool. That's exciting.
Also a shout out to somebody else who came out to the show, Brad and Katie from the Decomposition podcast.
Oh, nice. Yeah, nice of them to come out and support. That's very cool. All right. Well, KP, where can people follow you on the social media?
At KP Burke Sucks over at good old Instagram, at American Lizard Podcast on Instagram. And then also just KP Burke over on Facebook. They say go where you're having fun. And I have fun over on Instagram. I'm not a Twitter guy. So.
Oh, okay. Are you no longer on Twitter then?
Oh, completely got rid of it, dude. It's miserable. It's, I wish I had what you have for your Instagram, because you're playing Instagram right, by the way, where you're there and you can pay attention to everybody else, but you don't put anything else of your own up.
That's more just about laziness and still not understanding how Instagram works. I've been on it for like 2 years and I comment occasionally.
Doing it right, buddy.
I mean, I don't know if that's so much of a conscious plan, but okay. Thank you for the compliment. If you want to follow me on Instagram, I don't know why. I'm at Trumbull Comic, TRUMBULL, and the word comic. You can also find me on Twitter, where I'm much more active. And you can follow the show page at SNL Nerds Show on Twitter and Instagram.
And if you want to follow me on Twitter and Instagram, I'm at Darren Credible, D-A-R-I-N Credible.
Okay. So, yeah. So please, follow KP Burke on Instagram and go find him on Facebook and go see a comedy show that he's on, because he is one of the funniest guys around. He is one of my favorite people in comedy.
Well, yeah. Hopefully it'll be a show that both you and Darren are on. So that would be even better for all the listeners.
That would be nice. Let's try to make that happen. Yeah. Let's, someday we should do like an SNL Nerds comedy show, and we should get a bunch of the people we've had as guests on the show.
Ooh, now you're cooking with guests.
I'll text you guys offline. I have an interesting venue that's popped up.
Oh, okay. Ooh, teaser. Teaser.
Well, now you got to do it. You put your money where your mouth is. Now you
got to do it. Okay. Well, I don't know what that noise was. It sounded like a gunshot in my neighborhood, so I guess we could wrap it up.
They're coming for you.
The Persephone Crips at it again.
But KP, thanks so much for doing this. This was a blast having you on the show and just getting to talk to you for an hour and a half about nothing. So let's do it again, please.
Yeah, man, that was a good show you guys had, man. Thank you for having me on.
All right. So we will see you next week for Issa. Am I pronouncing it right now, Darren?
Correct.
Issa Rae and Justin Bieber. But until then, nerds out. Nerds out.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.